Juice Podcast. I'm Gwen Douglas.
I'm Emily Harmon.
Today we're doing Eastern Promises.
Eastern Promises.
We're doing some Eastern European wines.
Yeah. I don't know why, but Eastern Promises does sound a little bit more like Middle Eastern Promises for some reason, doesn't it?
No, I think just like...
I don't know why.
Yeah, because, I mean...
Just think of...
Yeah.
Textiles and people dancing.
But I mean, there is a slight overlap, I guess.
Yeah.
Little feeling of the East. I mean, if you're over there, something else is more East than you, so... East is East.
But essentially we're covering, like, the old Eastern Bloc.
Right, which is, we wrote it down, to not forget.
Yeah, so Hungary, Czech Republic, Poland.
Bulgaria, Romania,
yeah, Croatia.
It's like we're rapping or something. Macedonia, Serbia, Slovenia, and Montenegro.
Yes.
If we've missed you out, we're sorry.
And Germany as well, like half of Germany as well. So, I mean, quite interesting, and I think most of these countries, they have a longer tradition of making wine, but really it's only in the last few years we're starting to see them. And I think, you know, obviously because of the political climate in certain areas, wine production was either controlled or it stopped in some places. Okay. So I think we're still sort of seeing recovery from sort of Soviet times in a lot of places, but I don't know. I think there's a lot of promise.
Yes.
In the
East.
Times. Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
I guess the countries that people know better would be Hungary out of all of the... I guess Germany a bit, but not really the eastern part of Germany for wine production. Most of the key regions are in the west, other than Saxony for Zecht, obviously.
Right. Slovenia, not a more... Why do I always...
Slovenia's coming up a lot because of, obviously, all of the skin contact wines.
Right. Some of the nice ones from there.
Yeah, and I think that, like, Slovenia and Croatia in the last few years have really... some high-quality wines being produced.
A friend that just moved to Croatia, bought a winery, so hopefully in the next 5 years we see something.
Nice.
Yeah. We'll get some land for not so much, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Hungary, I mean, if you look at the sweetest wine, like, sweet wines in the world, fine wines, Tokaj, you know, like, there's a long history of Tokaj, which is... regarded as being up there with Sauternes.
Right.
I mean, it can be incredibly expensive and incredibly sweet as well. But I guess really the dry wines from Hungary as well, I've got one. I'm quite excited about.
I'm excited about my Bulgarian pick because until I'd had this wine, I didn't really know much about Bulgarian wine. So I was really happy to find a few of them at the wine shop. And everyone that I served this to in the past loved it. So it's very exciting when you find nice things from new places.
Yes.
Which I think is one of the reasons that this region is getting so much attention, is this push towards everyone wants to find the next new thing and the next cool hidden gem, especially in natural wine. Everyone's looking for that thing that no one's heard of.
I agree with you. And I think we've seen that as well with, I mean, the sort of the rejuvenation of the German wine industry and Austrian wine as well kind of has completely exploded in the last 5 years.
Yeah, like I think I'd never heard of Austrian wine living in North America. It wasn't like, I guess it's maybe not a hugely exported, or wasn't at the time. But now I think like Austrian wines are smashing it in the natural wine world more than anything.
Yeah.
And then I started dating an Austrian, so then I knew lots about Grüne Veltliner, a wine I'd never had before then. Whose are we going to have first? What did you bring?
I think we should do mine because I think it's not as rich as yours. What's the alcohol on yours?
13, I think.
Is it?
Yeah.
Mine's 13.5.
Oh. Yeah, 13. But I know mine is more
textural. Yeah. Let's try this anyway.
We can go back and forth.
Yeah. So I bought the 2013 Ferment from Vekater Pince. I think pincer, I've probably completely said that wrong, but that's the Hungarian word for like winery.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
It's funny, every time you typed it, I kept misreading it as prince.
Yeah. Becca to Pince.
Yeah.
Prince. Pince. Ah. So this is from a region called Somloy, which is spelt not like that, like Somloy. I think for some reason you said like an SH, Somloy. And it's a mountainous region and lots of volcanic soil, actually. So the grape varieties Ferment, Somloy is the region, Vekater Pince are the winery, 2013 vintage, sorry. This is quite an interesting producer. They're not super well known, but for those that are in the know, obviously they're very well regarded. So it's a small winery that I believe was set up in the 70s by a gentleman that I think is either he's retired now. Slowly started with one vineyard and then added on little parcels, and now okay. It's at 3.5 hectares, so it's still tiny. The vermouth's planted on basalt, which we don't see so often in Europe. I guess Canary Islands, there's lots of basalt, so it's all volcanic and traditional winemaking. So the winery now has been taken over by three younger guys, and they're kind of carrying on the tradition. So use of large Hungarian used oak, wild yeast, unfined, unfiltered, so they're like fully natural, just obviously sulfur at bottling, but quite classic, traditional wines.
And so ferment's
a grape variety, and it's found throughout Hungary, and it's the key grape, or one of the key grape varieties that's found in the region of Tokaj. So the two sort of important grapes in the production of white and sweet wine from Tokaj is ferment and harsh levelu. So most people, if they've tried a wine from Tokaj, would have had ferment before. And we don't really see it we definitely don't see ferment in Western Europe at all.
Yeah, no.
So a little bit in Austria, like on that southern border part, like near to Burgenland, we've got the region of Schopron.
Okay.
And you see a bit of ferment.
Just sort of the...
There are producers like Franz Wenninger has vineyards in Burgenland and also in Schopron. So does Moritz as well.
Okay.
So they're vinifying a bit of ferment, but mostly Hungary. I haven't seen it elsewhere.
The colour is great here. It's really quite bright.
Yeah.
Green tinge on that yellow. It's like a chartreuse, like yellow chartreuse.
Ooh. And it's it's 13, right? So it's got a bit of age on it. So that's also, it's starting to get some of these more savoury secondary notes.
It smells honeyed. Really nice. Yeah, totally honeyed.
Honeyed and kind of earthy at the same time, but then there's still this...
something crisp and fruity that I really want to like munch into.
And I think as well, this kind of like stewed quince kind of note as well. Like I actually find ferment to be a little bit like Chenin Blanc sometimes. I think because it can make really good still and sweet wines. It's got this lovely high acidity, always very high acidity, but then this sort of delicate white floral kind of note, chamomile sometimes, and like orchard fruit, dried hay.
Really nice smell. Yeah, dried hay.
So everything's hand-picked and then sorted by hand. This has a couple of hours of skin contact before pressing. And then it's fermented in 1,000 litre Hungarian oak and then moved to a slightly smaller oak for a year, 900 litres. And then it spends 2 years in steel before bottling.
It smells so good.
Keep going back to it. So when you first try it as well, that a crazy acidity coming through.
Definitely fills up your whole mouth.
Yeah. And I think that's the volcanic soil because it's got this kind of viscosity to the wine. Like there's an opulence. It almost tastes like there's been some botrytis on the grapes or something. And then this lovely, fresh, pure acidity. So it's quite nice that it's kind of got that lovely balance between being unctuous
it has a really
and
nice,
opulent, but then like racy at the same time.
It has a very nice feeling in your mouth. Like the...
Lots of glycerol.
Is that what that is, the...
that oil.
Coating of your that's what I mean, it just feels so soft and smooth inside your mouth,
and it's completely I double checked as well, like it's completely dry. It's just got 0.4 grams of residual sugar per liter, so it's like it's nothing. Interesting, like food pairing as well with this.
That's why I was just sort of thinking, because I actually think I could probably drink this without food, but probably best with food. Even just a little snack. What would you eat with it?
It's a good question, actually.
It's kind of a tough... It's a bit of a...
I don't know why. I don't know if it's because I mentioned about Middle Eastern food before, but I was thinking a little bit like... there's this recipe from this cookbook I've got called Sirocco, which is harissa and lemon roasted chicken.
Yum.
No, harissa's not too... No, but it's salty,
it's just,
right?
Right.
It's like salty spice. And then, like, with the lemon, I think that could be quite nice.
This could probably stand up to quite a bit of...
Yeah.
Different things.
Cheese, wash-rind cheese, why not? Mm. And why not, like, play around... I mean, because of the acidities there, like, even stuff that's got a little bit of fat to it.
My first idea, for some reason, was smelts.
I don't know what that is.
Those little tiny fish that are deep-fried.
That's pretty cool.
I have no idea. Yeah. It's like, boop, just want to eat some small little fried fish. Yeah. Even like terrine, a nice terrine with some jams. And yeah, I totally like this for charcuterie.
Yeah, ham hock.
Yeah.
Even like ham hock and mashed potato.
Mmm. Oh, yeah. I'm hungry.
This could be your bangers and mash wine.
Yeah,
yes. Yeah.
Mmm. Springtime bangers and mash. Maybe not a wintry one.
What's the difference?
I don't know. I feel
less onions. Do you have onions with your bangers and mash?
Yeah, I always do onions. I usually do like onion a gravy.
Yeah.
I do onion gravy and... Yeah, but winter, I maybe use like more of a red wine jus or something.
Okay.
But
yeah.
Easter mash.
White wine jus for this one.
Yeah. And onions, they're delicious. You can tell I'm hungry because I'm like, bangers and mash. Smelts.
It's interesting because that acidity that's there is really different. And I think there's almost like an iron quality to this wine. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. And I see what you mean also, because the acidity, it's not one of those, like, high acidity, screaming acidity. Like, I'm not like, oh, no.
Because it's quite opulent with that texture.
It kind of, like, I don't think it's quite interesting. I see what you mean about the irony thing. There is something sort of...
bloody.
Yeah.
In a good way.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, but...
it's that little, like, slight bitter aftertaste. Yeah. Almost like an apple pip or something, like the seed of a fruit. Yeah, I think, like, it's very versatile, let's say that. I think this could be a very... you could put this on a table where you're serving lots of things and it would go with everything.
Yeah, and I mean, I'd be looking out for ferment. If you do like Chenin Blanc, looking at ferment and maybe, you know, because I know that in big supermarket chains, even in, like, in the UK and Tesco, Waitrose, maybe not Tesco's, but definitely Waitrose, you'd be able to find a Hungarian ferment.
Really?
Maybe one that's a little bit... more neutral than this and more fresh, more like a basic Chenin.
Because this is giving me the sort of like vibes of what was the Chenin that we had when we did the fried chicken episode, the South African Chenin.
Secateurs. Yeah, but that's a bit creamier.
It's creamier, but it's the same, like, there's something about it that's giving me.
I think it's the texture.
Yeah. But there's definitely something about that that's reminding me of this in terms of mouthfeel.
I've been cooking mushrooms with South African Braai salt.
Oh.
For breakfast.
What is
and
this
honestly, it's like how I imagine crack addicts to feel when they eat it, because I've had to cut myself off from cookies.
Really?
Yeah, so I get filled mushrooms and I cut them really thick.
Yeah.
And then I heat some olive oil over the pan.
Yeah.
And then...
do you salt the mushrooms or you salt them after?
So I put them in, make sure they're covered with oil, and then I put this Braai salt, which is like a spice salt.
Okay.
On top of the
what
mushrooms.
What kind of spices?
There's like cumin, there's coriander... Okay.
It sounds good already.
I don't think there's paprika in there, but there's about five or six different ingredients in this salt.
Mm.
Oh my god. Like, honestly, these mushrooms, so you cook them before, so you don't like cook them too high because you want them to still stay firm, but you don't want them to be raw. So just get them so they're just cooked.
I could eat pans of cooked mushrooms.
Oh my god, honestly, Gwen. I had the same breakfast for 2 weeks in a row, like just day after day after day. And then I was like, I'm going to ruin this for myself.
Yeah.
So I had to cut myself off because I was like, I love this so much. I don't want to not want to eat it. And I just had some today, actually. It's the first time in a while.
Sounds delicious.
Luckily, when I went back down to the like greengrocers to get some more field mushrooms, they'd sold out. So I was like, that's probably
too much
of a good thing.
They're like, don't sell that woman from upstairs any more mushrooms.
Yeah, she's got a real problem. Do you not find that with certain foods, though, that sometimes...
Oh.
I mean, I did that with pork belly. I can't eat pork belly anymore because I just...
You're like,
I'd had it too much, like, eating the crackling, and I loved the fat that now I'm like...
So sometimes it's imposed upon me by Lucas. So he went...
with the lamb.
No, he went through... No, that's called betrayal. But
the... Side note, Gwen's boyfriend kept feeding her
sneaking
lamb and telling her it was beef.
And I kept being like, what's wrong with this beef?
Yeah, it really tastes like lamb.
Yeah.
Lamb has
a
really
gamey.
Subtle flavour.
Yeah. So the other... No, he was making this omu rice, this Japanese omelette, on the rice dish, and he was obsessed because it's quite a interesting technique to make it. And you end it where you have to like stir it constantly while you're cooking it, and at the end you like pour it out of the pan. It's fully cooked on the outside, and then you slice it and it opens and it's like egg custard inside. He cooked it all every day. It was like I couldn't get away from it. And then he started putting dried shrimp in, and I don't mind a bit of dried shrimp, but not every day. And
do you
not
cook it like in a wok? Like, is it in quite a lot of oil?
It should, yeah. Well, it's, well, I don't know if it's in
a lot. And you're like flipping it around a lot.
Not flip, you're using your chopsticks and it's like pulling away. Okay. It's like a, there's a very special technique. You watch this video like a thousand times.
I'm surprised you don't know it better.
No, I did watch him do it when I was like, oh, the eggs, I just go into the other room. But he started putting like dried shrimp in it too. And then finally I was like, one Sunday morning, I was like, I'm making sweet potato pancakes because I do not want to eat another omelette. And I like my eggs silky but not cooked. I like them a bit more cooked. He likes his really wet, like custard day, which for me grosses me out at breakfast. But then he started like the shrimp. I was like, no more shrimp, I can't handle the omelet anymore, I definitely can't handle the shrimp. So then he made a stir fry for dinner and I was like, is there shrimp in this? He was like,
no.
He said, but I cut it very small, how can you tell? I was like, because it's dried shrimp, this stuff is really potent. It's so salty.
Because I'm not an idiot. Yeah. I actually am interested in enjoying my food.
I cut it so tiny. Yeah. Because I know what a dried shrimp tastes
like. And then on another day, he'd be like, why can't you taste the shrimp? Mm. It's dried shrimp.
Can't wait. I really, it was like off omelets for ages after that because he killed it. Now I'm back on it. But we don't agree on the eggs.
I don't like them too runny.
We make
and
our
do you know
eggs.
What? My mum said it to me once, and it's ruined it for me as well.
What's that?
I didn't have an issue with them before, but I was out in a restaurant with her. My mum can be a nightmare with food. Sorry, mum. I know you're probably watching, but she's definitely watching and not listening. But I couldn't explain the podcast downloads to her. But we were in this restaurant for breakfast, and the egg came out, and I could just see immediately her face was just like, oh. No.
Why? This. What did they do?
So then you're like, what's wrong? She's like, I can't eat that. And I'm like, why? And she's like, it's snotty. And then every time I'm like, yeah. Oh, she's ruined it. Like, why did you have
I'm
to
say that?
I'm a real
fuss pot about this
it's
too.
It's so snotty. I can't have it.
But that's not well done. If the white isn't cooked, it should be just cooked through. If there's any of this like...
On a fried egg.
Yeah. That white should be still cooked. You shouldn't have that.
Are you a sunny side up kind of...
I like over easy because then you don't get a snotty egg.
I do that.
I flip them over. Yeah,
over easy. If I'm at home, I do that.
I don't mind sunny side if they've done it properly, where it's like, it should be slow and, you know, a little slower, but sometimes at restaurants they're just rushing. And it happens a lot with, same with like, I love soft boiled eggs, and sometimes you'll get it and it's like, it's just that smidge too soft. Like if any of that white is not cooked, it's not nice.
Have you ever had a family member put you off a food by saying something like that?
No, I mean, we're four kids, we're a bunch of fuss pots. Like when I think about food and like things I didn't like growing up, it's more like mum made us vegetarian for years during the mad cow scare. So she would tell us she'd made us chicken, but it was corn, and she would like bury the package in the rubbish bin because she knew we'd be in there like digging. I swear it's chicken. And we were like, this isn't chicken. Just like weird stuff like that. But otherwise,
I bet back then as well. Just I know when my mum got some corn sausages once at home, and my dad was just like, "This is awful." And she's like, "No, they're sausages. No, this tastes awful. I can't have it." Yeah.
And like, it's funny because actually they don't even make that corn anymore because now it's not. It's
really awful.
They put way more stuff in it. At the time, it was really still in its more mushroomy, because corn is essentially just a fungus, right? It's like in the mushroom family. And it has that texture.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's in the mushroom family.
I thought it was just like some kind of tofu mix.
No, it's actually like it's part of it, or the original one was this sort of shreddy, you'd get it in like a styrofoam thing with plastic on it. Now it's much more processed and not always vegan because they process it more now into like patties and shapes and whatever. Yeah. But at the time, yeah. That, and what was the other thing that would... Oh, liver. I still can't eat liver.
Liver and bacon.
Well, mum would make it for mum and dad with bacon and onions. For us, just pan fried plain white rice, and then she'd put the ketchup bottle in the middle of the table and be like,
Why wouldn't you get the bacon?
Because she was just like, it was lost on us anyway. It would just be like, you won't like it anyway, so here's the ketchup. And then my tactic was clearly the wrong one, because my brother was like, okay, I'll just douse the liver in the ketchup, eat the whole piece of liver as quickly as possible, and then I can like enjoy my plain white rice. Meanwhile, I was like, maybe if I mash the liver into my rice with the ketchup, it will. No, I just made everything taste like liver.
Liver with rice is also weird. I mean, you have it with mashed potato at least.
It's just horrible.
Get it down easier.
And then my poor parents realized how stubborn I was, because Mum was like, you're not going to bed until you're done this. And I was like, you don't know how patient I am. So I just sat quietly in the dining room.
3 a.m. She's still sitting there. Yeah, fine, go to bed.
They went to bed. They left me in the dark. They even like turned the light out at around 10.
Did you not just go to bed?
No, I just, because they could see me from the living room. I just sat there. Just waited.
It's like, what happened? How did it get resolved?
They went to bed. I was still sitting there in the dark. And then eventually Mum came down and was like, go to bed. And I was like, punch, cha-ching.
Don't feed me that again, because we'll do it again.
I was like, I can sit here all night quietly waiting. I'm a very patient person. That's how much I did not want to eat that liver.
I think I would have had a tantrum.
I was...
My parents were never... Actually, there was no... Mum was... She didn't... Actually, it was only grandparents that fed us liver and bacon. Mum never cooked that herself. There was nothing growing up that I really... Mum said I was fussy, but I don't think she ever cooked anything out of the ordinary or... Like, I felt... I don't know, like a lot of home-cooked lasagna and things like that. And But she was always very good at home cooking. Just, you know, a nightmare sometimes in restaurants.
We didn't go to restaurants. We're four children. Mum was like...
Even as a teenager? Look, I remember when we lived in Australia going to an all-you-can-eat mussels night, right? Have I ever told you this story?
No.
So we go to a restaurant, all-you-can-eat chili mussels. So it's like a tomato chili sauce. They're really delicious.
Yeah.
And I don't even like mussels.
I can't
but the
mussels,
sauce
yeah.
is so strong that you kind of can
yeah.
get away from it. So... they bring out the bowls. It's not like a buffet, but you just...
Yeah, they just keep bringing it. They're never
ending.
Keep
bringing it. Yeah. So, like, her second bowl comes, my second bowl comes, and we're like, this is fucking great. It's like $15 something.
Yeah.
We can eat chili mussels. Her bowl comes, and she looks at it, and it's the same. There's always the same expression. And you're just like, oh, no, what's wrong now?
Oh, no.
They're all closed.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, she's like, this is ridiculous. How could they give me a plate of mussels that are completely closed? And I was like...
I don't know, they don't really have much control
like,
over them.
You do know what this night is. Like,
right.
It's not... like
They're
this
smashing
isn't your,
it out.
But no, but like, this isn't the only bowl you're going to have. And then she's like, but this is ridiculous. I think I'm going to complain. I was like, order another bowl. Just order another bowl. It's all you can eat. Like, it doesn't matter about this bowl. But like, it was just like...
She was like, not having it.
And I was just like, oh my God, I don't know if I'm your child right
now.
This is bizarre.
No, we never ate out.
And I think she didn't order a second, like a third bowl.
She was, like,
she was just like, put it
shut. Put me off.
Yes, they're all closed.
That's really funny.
Maybe because they're the bottom of £1. Like, just go get another
bowl.
One.
Oh my God. Yeah, we didn't do restaurants. Because
we're
so...
Mad cow disease paranoia.
Yeah, that. And we're spaced out in age, where there's like a 12-year age difference between the youngest and the oldest.
Yeah, right.
So like, it's hard to make us all behave the same way at the same time. So you have like two small ones, they're about 18 months apart or something. It's like, yeah.
Because you're four, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Two brothers and a sister.
Yeah, I mean, it was a treat to go out. Usually it was to like an Indian or Chinese restaurant.
Even then they were like, oh, we're just going to order in. They just do takeaway. We did Indian takeaway usually most. Chinese or Indian takeaway.
So we would
on
always
Sundays.
Have to vote on it. I always voted Chinese and my little sister always voted Indian.
I loved both. And it's funny because when I think about, say, like egg fried rice from my childhood, the really English, like, bad takeaway on the corner that was literally just
top
like...
Top suey as well.
Or just, like, plain white rice with, like, some scrambled egg on top and then a
and
bit of
ham. And those tiny little red pieces of pork that would be in there all the time.
So strange. And it's funny because then I got really... When we moved to North America, I got really used to the sort of North American takeaway Asian food. And it wasn't until I moved back to Europe, to the Netherlands, that I got that same weird rice with a piece of ham and some egg on it that I was like...
Little pieces of ham and sometimes peas as well.
Yeah, well, I love a pea. Yesterday we ordered Indian food last night and I was like, the only dish I want is the cheese and peas.
Oh yeah.
So good.
Something paneer, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Paneer is the cheese. Delicious.
Yeah.
We had that.
Indian, I would say though, Indian is a better call in terms of takeaway in the UK.
In the UK, for sure. Although these days
all
I've been
right,
quite
Chinese,
disappointed.
But it's not like...
England loves Thai food, so now it's like Thai everywhere. Not enough Indian. Not enough good Indian.
There's more and more good Indian. There's more and more high-end Indian.
Here
well.
Is a huge problem.
I mean, it's a desert for Indian food.
We found
here.
A couple of delivery places. They're actually not that bad. They're quite far away and they take about an hour to deliver, but they're worth it. Very expensive.
I have not had one single piece of good Indian food in this city. Really? Other than once Nandish, who works with the Nickel Burger, he made a biryani at home and he bought it in to work for me because I said, I'm so sick of not having Indian food. And he was like, next time I saw him, he said, do you have time to sit down? And he set me cutlery and everything.
Aww, sweet.
And he's like, I'll be back in 5 minutes. And he bought in a meal for me.
That's so
nice. Such a good guy.
I love Indian food. When it's good, it's like, it's one of the things though, when you order it here and it's bad, it's just terrible.
Also, like, if it's not made properly, there's too much spice in it that it's like indigestible.
Or here, the problem is there's no spice.
Taco Bell, no thanks.
And it's just coconut milk. And because I think the German palate really likes sweet and loves creamy. So you end up with like, everything's got like added coconut milk. Even into dishes that shouldn't have it, they're just like, German, make it sweet and creamy.
In my experience, just from restaurants and clients,
right,
there seems to be a high sensitivity to spice here.
Yes, it's highly
like,
sensitive.
If there's a little bit too much pepper in a dish, it's like, I can't have it, it's too spicy. And you're like, what?
I know.
Bland living.
Yeah, they're like sweet, creamy, and then like a lack of spice. That's
soft vegetables.
So most food from other places other than Germany that I'm eating here tend to be on the sweeter, creamy, bland side. It's quite disappointing. But they exist, they're just, you have to hunt them down.
Berlin's changing, but...
Totally. Good.
Some of the locals' palates haven't quite caught up yet.
Here we are, just chatting away. See, it's delicious.
Yeah,
it takes you on a journey. So, I have less to say about this.
And because she's done her homework, she gets to use a proper bottle opener today.
Hooray! I'm starting to feel a bit more... a bit more human. So that's when we record these.
Yeah, a few glasses of wine tends to help, doesn't it? It's amazing how you can just like, I wasn't tired, I'm fine.
Everything's like rolling off my shoulders now, it's good.
Okay, so the wine that we have here that Gwen has bought is the MRV from Borovitsa 2017.
Canyon Park 2017, yeah.
Canyon Park.
So it's Roussanne, Marsanne and Viognier. So it's the Rhone varietals,
that's
I guess.
That's why the RMR.
Right. The RMV.
Or the MRV.
MRV. Yeah. I just like to do that to confuse you.
Yes.
Fantastically, this label has pretty much all the homework I needed written right on it, which I found quite interesting. So it's 28 months in Bulgarian oak, sandy clay soil type. The region is Vidin, northwest Bulgaria.
It's actually very beautiful where they are because when you look at it, it's got this... It has got like a mini Jurassic Park vibe about it in terms of there's lots of green trees and everything. And then these sort of, but less granite boulders, more like sort of red. There's like sort of small hills that are it's quite scenic. I did Google it. Yeah, it's quite pretty.
So I'd never had Bulgarian wine until I had this winemaker's wines. And again, thanks to Fraulein Brösel. And her lovely selection there.
Yeah, I mean, she is like, she just digs up anything obscure.
That's why I love
She's
going
the only
there.
Person I taste with every time, and I'm like, there's going to be something bizarre. Last time it was like, here's a crossing of this and this from this place, and I'm just like, where are you
and
finding
And I love
this?
Her taste too, because I find that her and I have quite similar taste. When she recommends something, I'm usually all over it. So I really love going there, because it's small selection, but always bang on. They sell yours there too, I think.
I actually did buy that through her as well. Yes.
Yeah, really, she's got some good stuff. So I guess anything else to say about this other than we should try it? I think there was something about the winemakers. One of them passed away in 2016, and now Adriana is like carrying on the tradition. I guess they were kind of a big deal in Bulgaria in terms of winemaking. I mean, I didn't know Bulgaria made wine until I had these, so...
Yeah, there's quite a bit of stuff happening in Bulgaria as well. I've got quite a few on the list at Mickelberger, actually, that I buy from Stephanie.
Oh, that's cool.
But
I haven't had any of the reds yet, because I've been...
When we do our Juice on the Road documentary series through the eastern part of Europe, we'll go there.
Yes. The smell already is...
I think we have tasted them in the right way.
Yes, I think so too. Also, this has like a... powder finish to it that's quite interesting
on the nose.
Yeah,
for me, I mean, I get a lot of these. There's quite a lot of stone fruit. There's almost this sort of waxy banana skin note going.
Yeah, maybe that's this sort of like there's this weird, like
overripe banana. You know, like it's been in your little Tupperware pot for too long and it's a bit sweaty.
But I think maybe that's also where I'm getting this powder thing, because that the milky part of the banana, the white part, sometimes gives off this sort of
bit of Yazoo banana.
Yeah, like even flowers like this give off that. This and daffodils have also that same like dusty.
I know what you mean. There is definitely a floral lift to it, like a white, almost like white flowers. Yeah.
So I'm excited to have this again.
And a sort of coffee grain. I'm getting a little bit of this kind of like sweet spice. There's some toasty notes.
It's I can like see the coffee.
It's like, it's like breakfast. It smells a little bit like you've just burnt the toast and melted some butter on it and you're about to have a cup of coffee.
I love it.
I don't drink coffee, but it's how I imagine. Scent of coffee.
Yeah, I've recently quit coffee.
Good for you.
It took me 3 weeks to wean myself off that addiction.
That's good. I mean, I'm all down for coffee drinkers. I just can't drink it myself.
I love it. It tastes so much, but I had to give it up a little bit. It was taking over.
It's good.
But it smells really delicious. This is actually something, when I first, the first smell for me, it already smells like something I would wear as a perfume. Because it's sort of like, not super girly sweet, but it's a really nice.
You got to stop wearing your wine now.
I know. Just splash it all.
I kind of love that. Just like a picture of you just.
I wish I could remember. There is a company that makes a bunch of wine perfumes. I have some at home.
Are they good?
Sorry.
Convenient cough there. I think we all know the answer.
I'm getting over this cold. No, I'll bring them in sometime. We'll have a whiff of them because I have a few. Yeah, they definitely did some.
Yeah, I love it. So what's nice about this is, you like I just said, stone fruit, white florals. Then obviously you are seeing the wood a little bit, but it's not. It's not intrusive onto the fruit, and the palate's very nice because it's got this oiliness and creaminess, but then lovely fresh acidity at the same time.
Yeah, delicious.
Lovely, that lovely fresh finish.
Yeah, it's really. I don't know why it's like visually. I just think of a daffodil. It's like the daffodil of wines. It's got this sort of...
Is that because of all the daffodils have come out 2 months early this year?
No, I don't know.
Have There's you seen them everywhere? It's fucking mad.
I don't know why I'm thinking daffodil. Maybe because it has that powder smell that I associate with daffodils.
Do you know what?
And it's just like maybe Easter brunch.
Maybe I've been bad, but I don't think I could recall the smell of a daffodil.
Really?
I don't feel like they have any smell.
Oh, they do.
Do they?
Yeah, like kind of like these guys do.
No, they're very strong.
These are different. No, okay, I'm going to have to buy you some daffodils. They have a really particular smell. They also smell quite strong.
Okay.
But not in a way that you...
I'm going to be buying daffodils for the next 3 weeks.
Yes.
And I'm going to keep sniffing them every day, so it's locked into my memory.
It's like a powdery smell. It's like a strange smell. But yeah, the last time I had this...
When you say powdery, do you mean musky?
That's what I think. On this, it's giving me an edge of musk. But no, powder, like...
But talcum powder.
Yeah. Don't know why that is.
Did I ever send you that documentary about weird addictions? And then there was somebody who was addicted to eating makeup. And it gets weirder. So when she tells her family she's addicted.
But what bits?
Eyeshadow. Like, so she's eating eyeshadow.
Like, I even want to know how that first came about. Because you wear eyeshadow on your eyes. So you're kind of
eating
like,
it. She's
I know, but
it.
You think like the first, like I definitely ate a chapstick as a child.
Yeah, because they taste sweet and fruity.
And you're like, I think it's going to taste as delicious as it feels on my lips. And then it was like I just ate some cherry flavored Vaseline. And it was like, not so, my teeth are oily now, not as delicious. But eyeshadow, it's like, how would you just be like, you're just looking at it in the box and you think, I want to put that in my mouth.
Well, it's all, there are a lot of unanswered questions. And I think this is a whole point of, it's very difficult to understand.
Right.
But there is a key piece of information that starts to make sense. So you see this person and she's gone to the doctor and the doctor's like, you know, you're going to die.
Does she have a deficiency of something? Is that why she's like craving it?
You know, like makeup's got arsenic in it and all these things. And I think it's, you know, it's not high quality makeup that she's consuming. It's just any old crap. So she's like eating it or whatever. And the doctor's like, you know, this is happening. You've got to really stop eating the makeup.
It's not edible.
Yeah. And then she sits down with her family. So before, it's really bizarre, the kitchen, but they're all having like...
It looks like a Mac shop. I want a Big Mac and it's like just Mac products.
Sorry. For some reason, I was in an Apple store when you said that, and I was like, no, it definitely was not that sheep.
No.
No, they're slicing pieces of, like, chocolate cake, and then they're putting talcum powder on top of the cake.
Like,
right?
More than one person is doing this. Like,
there's like three relatives there. They're all sitting down, and she's putting the talcum powder on, eating it.
So bad for you.
It's odd. So then, and she starts the conversation of, like, you know how we eat powder, talcum powder, and... You know, it's trying to segue
you want
into
cookie?
Her addiction.
That's the eyeshadow. She's like, you want to have a cookie?
She's like, you know.
It's a powder cookie just to have a little sliver of this bronzer.
So she's like, no, you know how we're eating powder? I've got something to tell you. Like,
are
I've
you
got,
those
I've got
are the people that you can open up to. They're already eating powder.
Yeah,
that's
so
not
she
that
tells
much of a
them, like, you know, I've been eating eyeshadow and I've got a real addiction to it. And they all look at her horrified. And I'm
meanwhile,
like...
they're like, sprinkling talcum powder on their
cake. And I'm just like, what? That's not right. Something's not right here at all.
Like, obviously, what you're doing as a family eating talcum powder has now moved into a new realm.
Apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
That, you know how we
young woman,
powder,
no,
where are they from?
I mean, it was funny, but it was so disturbing at the same time. And I mean, it's funny because it's just ludicrous, but then at the same time, you just think,
it's real
this
life
is actually
them.
Heartbreaking. Yeah. This woman thinks it's normal to eat. Well, she knows it's not right, but she can't stop eating eyeshadow.
I really wonder then sometimes, like, with these compulsions, I mean, it's obviously, like, one part OCD. But then I wonder, the initial... Like, are these people, do they have, like, a strange deficiency?
That I don't know, my friend says that they would understand if it was only metallic eyeshadows.
Yeah, right.
Because it was, like, something about it making, you know, like, because they're so
shiny
maybe,
on the inside.
Yeah, I think there is a bit of, like,
sparkle
this thing of
there.
If you're lacking confidence and...
I don't know, though. I think more, like, is there something, like, you have a mineral deficiency that you, like, want to eat rocks or eat talcum powder? Because talcum powder is made from rocks. I mean, it's already on the edge of being carcinogenic to powder all over your body. I can't imagine what it does to you on the inside. Like, the FDA has been, like, letting that thing squeak through for years. But it's, yeah, they've lots of studies are showing that it causes cancer in women. Because we're sprinkling in all of our bits. I mean, in the UK...
Are we? Like, I'm not.
I mean, as a kid, I was, like,
I think
obsessed
you put it on
with
a child.
Powder. I'd be like, boop! I still have a big powder puff from Shiseido. But now I'm on...
I do remember,
I'm off
like,
the talc
yeah, you're
now.
Right. Talc does
yeah,
come on when
like,
you're a child, but I think more babies, though. No,
no, I think like there's a huge like history of selling talcum powder in the UK, like florists. I mean,
see, if I think of people using talcum powder, I think
post-bath.
Of chefs.
It's because I'm a yes for chef's crotch or chef's ass,
chef's balls because they get
yeah,
sweaty.
They get sweaty.
But I've also heard you can use corn flour. Instead.
Yes, so that would be like there's companies like Burt's Bees, for example, that make a talcum powder free. Because it's crazy that we powder babies with this thing that's been known to... Mm. I know, it gets more peachy. It's giving me...
Back on the wine, we're not talking about the talcum powder, just for the people
sorry.
On the audio.
Sorry, I took a sip of this again, and it was really very stone... Like, the stone fruit's coming through more. It's really delicious.
I'm finding notes of vintage peach eyeshadow and...
It's definitely got this, like, peach... thing yeah. coming through, like really ripe, super ripe, juicy peach.
But I love that it has this sort of, there's this kind of lovely like purity and almost saltiness to the wine.
Totally. Yeah, this is really
the coffee
delicious.
Grain thing is getting more pronounced on the
I
nose.
Really, like, that's a fascinating note because the minute you say it, I totally understand what you mean by that.
Like the grains.
Just the grains, when you open the container of the grains and sniff it.
Mm.
Because they do have that.
Or just after you've made an espresso, because
right.
obviously I make coffee and things.
But there is like, a fruitiness to those beans that you do experience in the
yeah.
smell that totally makes perfect sense.
It's very Moorish. This is definitely I would treat this. I wouldn't necessarily treat it or replace a classic Rhone blend. You could. I think it's somewhere between sort of Burgundy white.
I was gonna say it's between
Rhone,
yeah.
And maybe even I might say
as a Meursault drinker, I mean this is when I had this I was like, wow, it's like Meursault, but the fruity version.
Yeah, I was thinking actually maybe like Roussillon.
Okay.
Like something, you know, like Lesoula.
No.
Right? But it's got a, it's on that same track.
I mean, I love
of, like,
that
volcanic,
yeah.
like, not volcanic, but like fresh soils or these richer varietals that are presented in a fresher
right.
way. Because this acidity
because
is very good in this wine.
Totally.
For
and I think sometimes Viognier can sometimes
Marsan.
Be quite flabby sometimes.
Yeah,
and I mean, oily.
Do you know the percentages of the...
No, I do not.
I'm assuming that the Viognier is at the end, but again, you know, this winery...
But it's probably more Hussan Marsan.
Yeah, but so they've called the wine MRV, but then, so it's, then it says Roussan Marsan Viognier. Like on their Gamay, they don't even spell Gamay correctly. So there is a typo issue on some of it, but they are obviously doing them in English.
I love the labelling. So. The labelling is amazing. Because it's so, it's like a prescription.
It is a bit like a prescription,
which is,
actually.
I kind of like. It's like a, there's something sort of scientific-y about this labelling, which I find quite charming.
Scientific-y.
But then it's like really...
But in a dated way.
Yes,
it's
like
almost
a...
like sci-fi films. Like if you go back,
this is 1986,
years,
basically, the label. It's giving me like
It's
early...
a bit like watching Dune, isn't it?
It's like weird science. Mm. I don't know, it's a... Yeah, it's very pixelated. I love it. Yeah, very nice label and delicious wine.
Yeah, it is. So, I mean, these are two wines that are from the eastern part of Europe. And I think there are so many more things to discover. So I'd just say, like, be open to trying wines from Bulgaria,
totally.
From Croatia, from Hungary.
Try it all.
And if anybody wants any tips on wines from these places, just get in touch because we've got a plethora.
We actually, I think both of us actually drink quite a bit of wine from this area. I do.
Yeah,
that's
and
why.
We've had like wines from the Czech Republic from our favourite Peter Korab before on the podcast. And I think there will definitely be more in the future. But
yeah
I think drink east.
Yeah, totally. I think like if you have some favourites, also we'd love to hear about them because I always like knowing about some new things. And we're gonna. Chat away with these after.
I think so, yeah. And in the meantime, like, we'd love it if you could check us out if you're following us on video. Obviously, we have the audio podcasts, which are available on every podcast platform. And equally, if you're listening to us on audio and you do want to watch us on video, you can do that. We're in Gwen's tattoo studio as well, Tycho Gallery in Berlin. And you will find us on YouTube. Just pop in Juice Wine Show and Podcast.
Mm-hmm. You can find us on Instagram at juice.podcast.
On Twitter at juice_podcast.
I don't know why that's so confusing for me to still say it. Like, it's...
I wish they were the same. It would make life very easy for everybody.
But there's someone using the handle and they don't even use it. It's really frustrating. Anyway, you can find us on the web at juice.show. Maybe you can pick up one of these snazzy tote bags pictured in the video for those who
yes.
are listening on audio.
And if you are following us and you are tuning in, please subscribe. We'd really support the support, actually. So it's going to come on the video shortly. There'll be a subscribe button just underneath me and a link through to another video underneath Gwen. And yeah, stay in touch and we'll be back in 2 weeks' time.
Until then, I'm Gwen Douglas.
I'm Emily Harmon.
Cheers.